Hey there, Freaky Fam, and welcome to another episode of Mads, Monsters, and Maniacs. I'm your host, Mads. Happy freaking Halloween. Just, this is Halloween, this is Halloween, playing all day long. Okay, we got Hocus Pocus in one room, we got Halloween Town in the other, and then those are the only two TVs I have in my house. I do happen to have two more that are in boxes that I impulsively bought one year on Black Friday because it was such a good deal. Thinking I was going to move sometime soon, I didn't. Also, don't rob me. It's like a Fort Knox up in this bitch. So yeah, happy motherfucking Halloween. Did I do what I wanted to do this October? No, I went to a pumpkin patch and that is it. I did watch a lot of horror movies. Like I said, I finally got HBO Max. It has opened a wide variety of things for me. I also, don't tell on me, snitches get stitches and end up in ditches, okay? But I have acquired my sister's Disney Plus information, so I can now freely watch all of those beautiful movies. Halloween spookiness all year round. It has been fantastic. Although I do own quite a few horror movies, but you know, it's just so much easier when it's like free to me, click, click, clack, and it's on my TV instead of walking up, unplugging like my Roku, plugging in my DVD player, you know the whole thing. In other news, I have completed season 3 of You. I'm astonished. I want to say it's Chef Kiss, but I'm really kind of mad at what happened to Love. I'm not going to lie. I love Victoria. She's everything. Although the last scene in the TV series, whatever, the last episode, whenever Penn Badgley is just like that stylist knew. They knew what they were doing. Him in them trousers with those loafers and no-show socks, he looks so hot. I'll say it. He looks so good there. But anyways, because it's Halloween, I don't want to bore you with the mumbo jumbo in the beginning of the episode. So we're going to go ahead and get into the episode. I'm kind of hoping that I can do this in a really sweet take, so there's not a lot of editing, so I can get it out very quickly. Since I am recording and posting today, I was going to post yesterday and then I was like, wait a second. Tomorrow's Halloween. We'll just post it tomorrow. And I worked a lot the last couple of days. And then I also have to work a little bit today. So regardless, obviously this episode has made it to you today. The time, well, that I'm not quite sure about. So we're gonna do what we can do. I also don't know how long it's gonna be because I just realized that I did 7 pages. Can you believe it? I know. There was just so much information about this case, but at the same time, there wasn't so much information about this case. So I did watch a YouTube video over it by this girl named, I think her name's Bella Fiore. I'm so sorry if that's wrong, but she was adorable. She's like Australian. I loved her accent. I usually don't watch things kind of like that because I don't want to retell it exactly how they're telling it or something like that, but she did have, in some areas, more information than what I could find. I also went to see if she listed any sources, and she didn't. So I did post her video in the sources section of the description of the episode if you would like to check it out. Like I said, Australian, that's really all you need to know for you to want to go watch it. Also, before getting started, I just want to say that the Instagram page has had a couple more followers, and guys, I can't believe people listen to me. Hi. Okay. Anyways, let's go ahead and get into this episode. All right. So this week's case is about Kurt Sova. This case is astonishing to say the least. So Kurt Eugene Sova was born on July 15th, 1964 to his parents, Dorothy and Kenneth Sova. He was the youngest of 4 boys and was reportedly extremely close to both of his parents. They lived in a suburb of Cleveland called Newber Heights, which is in Ohio. And he, of course, was a great kid, never got into any sort of trouble, lived in a quiet neighborhood. He was really good in school, responsible for a 17-year-old. Like, he would not come home later than 10, 11 max. And his parents always knew where he was and when he was coming home because of how responsible he was. His parents were pretty lenient with him on curfews and always letting him hang out with his friends. Like I said, he had no issues with anyone. He was never in trouble with police or neighbors. And it's just, it's honestly the usual works of cases like these. The smile that lights up the room kind of cases. Obviously, teenagers don't tell their parents everything despite how close they can be with them. Dorothy later said in an interview that they didn't have any idea that Kurt even drank alcohol, but when talking to his friends, they said that he would drink occasionally and smoke cigarettes, and sometimes they would smoke weed if they had any. I mean, hello, it's like the early 80s. I mean, rock and roll is the rage at this point. On October 23rd, 1981, it was a Friday and Halloween was approaching. There was a carnival going on that Kurt was thinking about going to. Can you believe it? I want to end up in one of those like Hallmark towns that go hard during the holidays. I want a Halloween carnival. I want pumpkins to be filled in the entire town. I want to be able to walk places. Will I? Probably not. And then I want a bunch of freaking trees. So during the fall, I can live my best Hallmark Halloween. So Kurt left for school about 7:30 a.m., but apparently he didn't actually go to school that day, which his parents weren't aware of. He went to a liquor store and just kind of hung around outside trying to get someone to buy him a bottle. He was successful and someone bought him a 190 proof bottle of Everclear. And if you don't know what Everclear is, it's one of the strongest alcohols in the world. It's actually illegal in many states here in the U.S. because of its potency, which is about 95% alcohol. I remember going to a party once when I was a wee little teenager and someone put Everclear in their mouth and then like had a lighter in front of them and like spit at the lighter and it was like whoosh, like just lit up so quick. It's absolutely crazy. And apparently in some states you have to have proof that you're using it to disinfect or to clean with it because of how strong it is. Could you imagine going to a liquor store just to get Everclear so you can clean your house? You're like, oh yep, this will do. Kurt then apparently took it to one of his girlfriend's house and he was drinking it for most of the day. Around 4:30 p.m., he headed out and was going to go to that carnival when he ran into one of his friends named Samuel Carroll. This is one of those sad moments where they almost had a completely different story, but unfortunately, they met up with someone and it changed their path. It was about a block away from his home, and Sam suggested that they should go to a Halloween party that was at this duplex about 2 miles away. They headed to the party, and as we know, Kurt was already tipsy, and even though he drank occasionally, he was considered a lightweight, so he got pretty drunk really quickly. This same friend, Sam, at some point noticed that Kurt was really drunk, so he decided it would be a good idea to take Kurt outside and get him some fresh air in hopes that he would sober up, maybe puke and sober up. He was just really trying to help him out. They were outside for about 20 to 30 minutes when it started to get even colder that night. So Sam went back inside the house to get him and Kurt their jackets. And he last saw Kurt holding onto a chain linked fence. He was inside for roughly about 2 to 3 minutes max and grabbed their jackets, came back outside, but Kurt seemed to have vanished. There was really no record or report of anyone at the party claiming to have searched for him, which is kind of crazy to me. He was drunk and incapacitated, but Sam did look for him. He was really confused at first because there was really no time for Kurt to have wandered that far. So he was kind of thinking that someone else would have had to have driven by and offered Kurt a ride home. He still walked around the surrounding area searching for him, yelling his name, but he couldn't find Kurt anywhere. So after that, he just kind of reasoned with his own mind and was like, that had to have happened, and he decided to go back to the party afterwards. So at this point, Kurt was still not home. We'll get to it later, but there's absolutely no timeline other than the dates for this case. So his parents started to grow more and more worried. So his mom, Dorothy, hopped into her car and kind of drove around to some of the spots that she knew Kurt would hang out looking for him. She couldn't find him, so she went back home thinking that he would come back at some point because, again, Kurt was a reliable kid. By the next morning, Kurt had not returned home. Initially, his parents assumed that he must have stayed the night at a friend's house, but they were still pretty worried. So Dorothy started calling all of Kurt's friends' houses, asking them if Kurt was there. And of course, she got even more worried when he was not at any of their houses. So Kurt's father, Ken, began searching their neighborhood for him. They did manage to gather around 40 people to help look for him, and they all searched throughout the entire day. On Sunday, October 25th, they still had not heard from Kurt, so they decided to file for a missing persons report. Like most missing persons reports on teenagers, the police were not super interested, and they really dropped the ball when it comes to this case. Dorothy and Kim were really upset by how the police were handling the case, so they felt like they needed to take the investigation into their own hands. And let me tell you, they did the damn thing. Dorothy made flyers and started posting them around the neighborhood and town. Ken just kept searching anywhere that he could. He searched neighborhoods, ravines, he even looked through dumpsters. That's honestly super heart-wrenching, but like they were trying to find their child. They were not sitting by. They were not going to let the police totally fuck up this case. That does happen still, but they were doing everything that they could in their own power to find their child. So here's where things start getting a little more sus. So Dorothy had been questioning absolutely anyone who might know Kurt, friends, acquaintances, anyone she could find on the street. And one of his friends told her about the party that Kurt had gone to on Friday night. And it was at a girl named Susan's house. I will say, in a video that I watched, they call her Debbie. But in most sources that I look through, her name was Susan. So I'm going to say Susan for this, but I just wanted to add that in there. So Dorothy went to the duplex, which is where Susan lived, and she was greeted by another girl instead. The girl told her that she was babysitting and that Susan was at work. So Dorothy left her name and number and asked the babysitter to have Susan call her later. Susan did call her back, but Susan informed Dorothy that Kurt had not been at her home, and she did not have a party. Poor Susan, she doesn't know that she's dealing with a detective here, because that was disputed because a pizza delivery guy made a statement that he had delivered a pizza to Susan's home on Friday the 23rd and said that there was definitely a party going on. So of course, Dorothy confronted Susan with this, and Susan changed her story, but this time with the truth, or somewhat. Susan admitted that she did have a party and Kurt did attend. Apparently, most of the guests were from Detroit and Kurt was not familiar with them. Susan told Dorothy that Kurt was drinking pretty heavily and she did not know what happened to him during or after the party. Everyone at this party said that Kurt was excessively drinking that Everclear bottle. Once again, his parents knew that he was going to party at some point. Hello, he's 17, but they were shocked that he was drinking such a strong alcohol, and apparently he was drinking it excessively, which Kurt was not known to do. So after Dorothy received this information, she of course was giving it all to police. She was not trying to solve it on her own. She was trying to help the police out. So here's some more suspicious things that happened during this case. So the owner of a local record store had allowed Dorothy to post one of her flyers for Kurt in her store window and apparently had a strange conversation with an unknown man that weekend that Kurt went missing. Apparently, the man came in. There are conflicting reports saying that he was homeless. Some were saying that he was a random guy from Detroit. But he came in and approached the owner, saying that it was fruitless to have a missing person's flyer up and saying, you might as well take it down. He's going to be found dead in 2 days and nobody's going to know how he died. He also said some strange things, like he had access to bodies that were flown into Cleveland Airport and sometimes he stole shoes from these bodies. Remember that. Just remember that tidbit. The record store owner did call the police and filed a report, and police did take her statement, but they kind of just sat on it after that. And then Susan comes back into play. She told Dorothy that there had been someone sleeping in a cot in her basement the last couple of days, and she thought it might be Kurt. You can definitely say Kurt was at your party. You do remember that. But now you're not quite sure if this is Kurt sleeping in your basement. Like, do you know what he looks like? How can you confirm one and not the other? Doesn't make sense. But thankfully, our girl Dorothy has been a detective and was instantly skeptical because Susan had already lied to her before. Ken went to Susan's basement to inspect it. There wasn't any of Kurt's personal belongings there or really anything that indicated Kurt had been there at all. There was a cot down there and it did appear to be recently used. He apparently felt it and it was still warm, but there was no way of knowing if Kurt had used it or not. On Wednesday, October 28th, around 5:30 p.m., three young boys were playing at the J.L. Goodman warehouse, which was near the duplex. They began exploring a ravine on Harvard Street when they found Kurt's body. It was 500 yards from Susan's duplex. Kurt was found face up in a puddle and wearing a yellow shirt. He was barefoot. His left shoe was found 12 feet from his body, shoved in a pile of rocks, and they've never recovered his right shoe. I know we all talk about seeing like black trash bags on the side of the road and being like, a body, but I'd never thought about that with shoes. I used to tell my friends that I was going to make an Instagram account called Lone Shoe, and I would post photos of shoes that are literally everywhere because you always see single shoes on the highway, in ditches, all kinds of different things. But I did not think about this. And I don't think I'll be doing that anytime soon. The boys didn't know what to do, so they began running until they ran into a man working in the area and told him what they had found. He was skeptical at first, but went back to the ravine to look for himself, and after also seeing the body, he immediately called the authorities. When police arrived, they noted that he was posed as if he was on a crucifix. His arms were spread out, and he had one leg crossed over the other. There was no sign of assault, and the only injuries on Kirk's body were minor scrapes and bruises, which authorities believed were caused by walking around barefoot. So Newber was a smaller town and didn't have a forensic expert. So Cleveland police offered their forensic expert to help on the case, but weirdly enough, Newber rejected. The autopsy listed Kurt's manner of death to be natural or accidental and could not determine a cause of death. Chief Deputy Coroner Dr. Lester Adelson said the manner of death in this particular case was signed out as probably accidental. He hadn't been beaten in any way. He hadn't been traumatized in any way. He didn't have enough alcohol to end his life. He had no pre-existing natural disease. And as Sherlock Holmes said, you eliminate all other possibilities and that which remains is the truth. So basically what he's saying is that this was a process of elimination. The autopsy did reveal, though, that Kurt had been dead between 24 and 36 hours from the time his body was found, meaning that he likely died on the 26th or early of the 27th. It's unknown what Kurt may have been doing between the party on the 23rd and his death. I also wanted to note that when they tested his blood alcohol level, it was 0.11. So, I mean, he was drunk, but he wasn't drunk enough for it to really have been his cause of death. And we'll get into that in some of the theories in a little bit. Lieutenant Robert Caress was head of the case, and it was apparent that he just wanted the case to be closed. He told Dorothy that she was in denial and basically told her to move on and get over it because it is what it is. He thought that Kurt was too drunk and that caused him to put himself into that position. He apparently was not intrigued by the case from the start and didn't really care to get involved. He didn't look too far into it, but of course he kept up media appearances and press conferences. He said in a press conference that Kurt was dumped in the ravine, but that whoever did it would have had to know the area, basically insinuating that it was not an accident. But this was all for the cameras because of the way he was treating the investigation, and apparently he was treating the Sova family very terribly as well. As we just talked about, he was telling Dorothy to get over it. Regardless if it was an accident or a murder, that was her baby. That was her child. That's not something you're just going to wake up and be like, oh, it was good knowing you, 17-year son, but I got a life to live. No. No. The Sova family did not believe his death was natural or accidental. They also expressed doubt that Kurt had died 24 to 36 hours prior to his body being found. They believe that he had died on the 23rd. Ken also stated that he had searched that same ravine on the 26th and Kurt's body had not been there. The Sovas believe that his body was dumped there either that evening or early Tuesday morning. They also believe that he was being held at the duplex before he died and then moved to the ravine after. The owner of the record store that reported to the police the statement about that creepy man, after his body was found, she had received a bouquet of flowers with a creepy card that read, "Roses are red, the sky is blue. They found him dead and they'll find you too." Police were able to identify and interrogate the man, but determined his behavior was a result of him being mentally and emotionally disturbed. So, like anyone else would, they ruled him out as a suspect in Kurt's case for reasons absolutely nobody knows. And then, of course, he ditched town. Nobody ever saw him again. It's just, this whole thing is so sketchy. So there were several instances where people came forward to Dorothy with information, but there was no proof of any of these instances actually involving Kurt in them. There was a woman named Angeline that said a few days before Kurt's body had been found, she was looking out of her window and saw two men carrying another man. She just kind of assumed that it was two friends helping one of their drunk friends get home, but of course she didn't think much of it at the time, but after they had found Kurt's body, she called up Dorothy. Dorothy notified the police, and the police said that they would look into it and follow up with questioning, but of course they never did. Then one of Kurt's classmates came forward and claimed that he had seen Kurt alive and seemingly well on Monday, October 26. The classmate was going to a job interview, and while driving by, he saw Kurt and offered him a ride home. But then a van pulled up. He didn't know the people in the van and didn't think that they were locals. And he said that Kurt started walking up to the van and yelled, "Franco!" And the classmate was not aware that Kurt was missing at the time. So he didn't really suspect anything to be wrong. He just thought it was another one of Kurt's friends giving him a ride home. He did do an interview on a segment of Unsolved Mysteries and expressed a lot of regret, saying that he wished he would have followed the van. After this, Dorothy was struggling to get any new information, and obviously the police were given multiple leads and had done nothing with it. Over the next 9 years, Dorothy fought to have Kurt's case reopen. She did manage to get four different departments to at least look at Kurt's case, but because the case wasn't taken seriously in the first place, they didn't have much to go off of. The Cleveland police did manage to take over the case, but when they requested the documents from the Newburgh police, they were handed a manila folder with a couple pieces of paper in it and four Polaroids. Like, they literally did not even have a photo of him at the crime scene, like where he was found. They literally only have a photo of him at the coroner's office. In 1990, they officially reopened the case and said that if they would have known how badly the Newburgh police had botched the case, then they probably would have arrested some of the officers. When prosecutors took over the case, they realized how awful the Newburgh Police Department actually was. Police Chief James L. Lucas was falsifying police credentials. He also was found off duty at a party where there was illegal gambling. He ended up losing his job and was barred from ever working as a police officer again. And then the FBI got involved and really started taking an interest in the Newburgh Police Department. Robert Caress, the officer that told Dorothy to relax and get over it, yeah, that asshole, he was charged with brutally beating five criminal suspects between 1988 and 1989. Most people think that it was probably more because of how long his career was, but he was also charged with 76 counts of aggravated drug trafficking and illegal processing of drug documents. Unfortunately, even after the case was taken over, the case was botched so badly, like it was practically non-existent. So there wasn't really anything that they could do or go off of. There wasn't really anything to work with. They had four photos and then like a couple pieces of paper. They were not writing down anything Dorothy had given them. They were not taking any other statements from the people that she had gotten the information from. They didn't even go and search the duplex. Like someone literally was like, oh yeah, I think that kid was staying in my basement. And they were like, oh, that's cool. We're going to close the case. Like they did not do any of that. They didn't go search. They were like, oh, he's missing. Oh, he's found. Oh, the case is closed. Like they give LAPD a run for their money. Kurt's father, Ken, passed away in 2001 and Dorothy passed away in 2014, still not having any more answers. Two out of three of Kurt's brothers have also since passed. His case is still considered open and listed as a probable accident. In November of 2019, the Newburgh Heights Police Department announced a partnership with Tiffin University to investigate Kurt's case. In February of 2020, Kurt's case was featured in the CrimeCon event CrowdSolve, which had 100 volunteers look over the case, but no new information has been released, so it's unlikely anything new or relevant came from these participants' observations. So 3 months after they had found Kurt's body, there was another very similar death that occurred of a 13-year-old boy named Eugene Cavett. I'm going to say Cavett. He was found in a ravine on Harvard Street in January 1982. Like Kurt, Eugene was found barefoot with his left shoe found at the scene and his right shoe never being recovered. Eugene's autopsy ruled that he died by accidentally falling into the ravine. Kurt and Eugene reportedly knew each other but were not well acquainted. Eugene's case is also unsolved. I find that interesting that they think he like fell in and that's how he died, because that impact would have to be crazy to knock both your shoes off, but knock the right one out of the universe. But of course, because police didn't give a shit, they didn't make any sort of connections. They didn't think that maybe we have a serial killer. Maybe this is a copycat. They didn't look into it. They didn't do any of that. Once again, open, close, done. So I do want to talk about some theories. So on a couple of the sites that I used to pull this information, there were some really good comments on it. On unsolved.com, a user named Not You said, autopsy conducted by an actual ME or a coroner, because I'm reading coroner, who are usually elected officials and don't necessarily have medical training. Either way, I think the time of death is off. Cold temps and he was allegedly submerged in water from the shoulders down. Allegedly, his coat was found at the party. Allegedly, his blood alcohol level was 0.11. Everclear is no joke and illegal in many states. If he drank a bottle to himself, I think he wandered off and tripped, fell for long enough his alcohol level came down but died from the elements. I thought that they brought up some really good points in there.
Although I didn't find anything that indicated that his jacket had been found at the duplex, especially because Ken searched there and said that there was nothing that really indicated Kurt had been there. But I did find that that point was very interesting. I also thought that it was interesting that they think that maybe Kurt possibly died from the elements. That's not necessarily the theory that I go with, but we'll get into that in a minute.
I was also on a Reddit page, and there were some really good comments on there as well. There was one user suggesting that maybe he fell into a coma because of the amount of alcohol in his system. And maybe Susan allowed him to sleep it off in her basement when he fell into the coma, and then they panicked and dumped his body. Other theories include alcohol poisoning, and maybe Kurt wandered into the basement where the party host found him the next day. If that were true, there couldn't be many people involved because, I mean, someone would have talked by now. We all know, like, you can't have multiple people in on it.
This is definitely the most plausible theory, I think, to me, just because it would make a lot more sense if he was to have passed out in the basement and then they found him the next day, and instead of calling the authorities, they panicked and threw him out into the ravine, and it could explain why he was like missing his shoes and things like that. But the one thing that does get me is, if that were true, how did he get down there whenever his friend left him outside? I mean, maybe they somehow casually passed each other and missed each other if there were a lot of people at the party. But then whatever happened to his other shoe? I mean, maybe they found it and panicked and got rid of that as well. But then how did he get bruises and scratches on his feet that investigators believe is from him walking around barefoot? There's a lot of, oh, this could work, oh, maybe it can't work, kind of back and forth within this case. I also couldn't find an autopsy report for this case. I don't know if I'm just missing it or if there's just not one online. But there, like, as we said, like, there's no moments of impact. So I really think it would have had to been something like alcohol poisoning, or maybe all of the alcohol he drank did send him into a coma, and that's why they couldn't rule anything like that out, and that's why they couldn't classify it as such. But then one thing that just really puts a hole in my theory is that of the other little boy, Eugene. I mean, he was 13. There's no way the same exact thing happened to him. So maybe it was a coincidence. I don't know. I don't really believe in coincidences.
But there's definitely other people involved. Like, especially because his dad searched that ravine, and that doesn't make any sense for him to be found like a few days later in that ravine after his dad searched. And then even when his dad went down there and searched the basement, there's no way Kurt, if he was still alive, yes, laying on that cot, it would still be warm. But if he had died, that cot would not be warm. Absolutely not. So, I mean, maybe they had someone laying in it for a while, and then when the dad came in, they obviously weren't laying in it anymore. But I can't believe police didn't even search it. They could have easily told us, like, yeah, he'd been there. Here's one of his hairs. Like, it's so aggravating how they just fuck up these cases. And they fucked it up so royally bad that even when the right people were trying to come in and help, there was literally nothing they could do. Absolutely astonishing.
Unsolved cases just really kind of get on my nerves sometimes, because I want a resolution. I want to know what happened. I need it kind of in black and white, and there's way too much gray here because we don't have any other further information. There was nothing else that could be done, and it's just so frustrating that I'm going to have to wait to get on the other side and be able to get some answers here. It's so aggravating. But that is all I have for you guys this week. I'm sorry that there was no resolution. Some unsolved cases, I think, that are kind of fun. It's like your own little murder mystery game. But with things like this, when you don't really have many suspects or anything to go on, that's when it gets frustrating. This will not be the first and only unsolved case. I'm sure we're going to cover more on here, and hopefully I can create some kind of dialogue for us to be able to figure these cases out. Let's solve some cold cases, guys. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this week's episode. If you would like to follow along online and see photos of the cases that I talk about, my Instagram page is at Mads Monsters Maniacs. If you would like to email me a recommendation of a case, if you have any more information, please don't email me if I mispronounce things, because I do that in my day-to-day life and I can barely speak the English language, apparently, even though it's my first language. My email is madsmonstersmaniacs@gmail.com. I hope you guys have a very spooky Halloween, and please, please, please be safe. Thank you guys again for listening, and I will talk to you later this week, I guess, since today is Sunday. We will be posting again on Saturday. So talk to you then. Bye.